Blog Talk Radio.
To the hottest internet radio show and podcast, The Author's Lab, a place for an eclectic and lively discussion of the dynamic world of writing, publishing, and marketing of the written word. I'm your host, the Sage Griot Robert Batista. Follow me on Twitter at author R. Batista and make it a point to follow The Author's Lab on Blog Talk Radio. Just click the follow button on our page. Today, we are excited to have as our guest award-winning author, modern mystic, wellness consultant, and so much more, Grace Blair. Grace, welcome to the Author's Lab.
Oh, thank you, Robert. It's so much fun to be here. I'm excited to talk about Einstein's Compass and whatever else you want to talk about with marketing, books, publishing. Let's go for it.
Yeah, let's do that. First off, I'd like to say happy birthday.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So, Grace.
I'm 40 again.
40 is a good age. It's good to be 40. So, Grace, let me first start off by saying it's so good reconnecting with you again. And let's start off by you giving the audience a synopsis of what your life as an artist and professional entails. Walk us through a day in the life of Grace Blair.
Well, it depends on the book I'm writing. Nonfiction is a little bit more organizational, where you have to think about how people are going to interact with the information personally. When you're writing fiction, it comes from a different place altogether. And I had to learn how to write fiction. I went to workshops and read books. My favorite authors for fiction, especially historical fiction, are James Michener and Ken Follett. My favorite author for science fiction is Ray Bradbury. So I combined these authors' methods, so to speak, with my own way of understanding story, and had to do a real learning curve. And this book started in 2012. So it was really a lot of research on Einstein himself, on Atlantis, research on the biblical parts of the story, which was Jerusalem and Egypt, also the Shamir Stone, which goes back into biblical times during the time of Solomon, and also Atlantis. So there was a lot of research, and it depended on the day what else I needed to do. I'm retired from business, so I have that luxury of organizing my own time,
right.
And I have a husband. So it just depended on what needed to be done when, but when it came to story, it was like channeling. It would just come to me in pictures, and I would just throw it on the page. And sometimes I would write for hours, and sometimes nothing would come at all for a few weeks or even a month. And so it just really depended. I don't think there's anything called writer's block. I think there's a misnomer about that. I think
All right.
the story comes when it wants to tell you it about it. And the book will be born when it wants to be born. So it's a matter of being in touch with your creativity and being aware of when the story wants to come.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good point. Part of your bio states, throughout her adult life, Grace became a serious student of the spiritual. She found that often psychological principles and practices were incomplete, but could be filled out by adding the missing spiritual component. Her approach was always to see practical applications for what she uncovered in the mystical. It was through immersing herself in the field of study and experience that she came up with her idea for her book, Einstein's Compass. Can you go into a little more detail, Grace, on how uncovering the mystical produced the seeds of Einstein's Compass?
Oh, of course. I've written 3 nonfiction books having to do with Do You Have a Dream? 5 Keys to Realize Your Dream. And all that has to do with going inside to the spiritual heart of who you are. And I've have more than 40 years experience of working in my own inner awareness of what the spiritual heart is and what that journey was for me. Now, I thought Einstein was somewhat of a mystic himself. He had thought experiments, and he did a lot of things within his inner consciousness of his own spiritual heart. So I saw some things that he did to come up with his creativity that I was doing in my own life, which was going inside, using creative thoughts and ideas, and saying, what if? What if Albert Einstein had a magical compass that inspired his theories of relativity? That became the premise for the book. And it's a hero's journey. It's a spiritual journey. And it's how people can learn how to go into their own spiritual heart to fill in those places that may feel maybe you're depressed or you're looking for a direction in your life.
Right.
I really think Albert had a goal, and he used his inner abilities of thought process to find what he was going for.
Now, I know you centered this around Einstein, but what was it, besides what you mentioned, about Albert Einstein that fascinated you and led you to write a fantasy book on his young life?
Well, Albert wasn't always famous. He was a young boy, like every young boy during the horse and buggy days. You have to think about it. During that time period, the only technology that was available was the light bulb. So I thought, well, where in the heck did he come up with this idea of this most advanced technology to change the world? Where did his miracle theory come from? So I thought, well, maybe he was really, his soul was really from a high technology environment like Atlantis. Maybe he was a pre-scientist from long ago, and he was trying to remember what he did back then. I mean, his theories are still changing our world today.
Right.
So I looked into Edgar Cayce's Atlantis, and there is a spiritual high technology information about what Atlantis was all about. And it had to do with energy, had to do with time and light and crystals. And this was all what Albert was trying to uncover. And so I thought, well, gosh, I think he was really from Atlantis. So that's where the whole Atlantis and the spiritual part came in, of really where he was from another lifetime. And I actually take 20 years of his real life before he became famous. And I layer that as the basis of the story as he gets a compass from his father when he's a small boy. And that compass put him on the direction of what is time, what is light, what does this mean? So that little compass that his father gave him put him on this journey. So I took the compass as a metaphor in the story of not just a direction finder, but the direction within Albert himself and the journey that he took to create his theories of relativity.
Yeah, I love the metaphor concept, the allegory of the compass. And the two, to me, the most gigantic words in the English language is what if. It's just two amazing words. So Grace, it seems like Einstein's Compass was a major work for you to create with all the historical research you did. How long did it take you to write this story, and did you have any setbacks in the process?
It took me about 4 years to write it.
Okay.
I have a partner, Laren Bright, who lives in California. Laren and I have been involved, been friends for about 40 years. And part of the process for me in writing this was to learn how to write. And Laren is a professional writer. He's written for television and Hollywood. So he was teaching me, as well as I'm reading books on writing, going to workshops, doing the research on who was Albert Einstein, what is Atlantis. It was so much happening at one time. We got a little waylaid with some of Laren's, something came up in his life where he wasn't able to participate for a while. But I still kept writing. And the only obstacles that I came up with was who do I have help me put this book together in a way that it's edited properly, it's laid out properly, the cover has to be a professional cover. So it was really, where do I put all these pieces together so it looks like a big publisher had done this? I wanted to make it perfect, not just something I wrote off my computer and put on Amazon. This was a very big project for me, and I've spent over $12,000 so far getting this book done. It's my Social Security money that I'm spending. So it was an incredible creative process for me, and editing this book was really important to me, and that was probably one of the hardest things to do to get it done right. I know you know what that means, Robert. When you have
a
book,
sure do.
But you know you need help, right?
I sure do. And, that editing portion is so major. So you self-published this through your own publishing company, or how did that work out?
Yes, I set up my own publishing company, Modern Mystic Media, LLC. I'm a limited liability corporation. So
okay.
I own all the rights to this. Yeah. And that way I have a business account. I have credit cards that, you know, I try not to spend too much on. but it's not hard. When you get into what it takes to make a book right, it's expensive.
It seems that Einstein's Compass is an expansive fable that latches onto the basic concepts of light versus darkness and good versus evil. Talk about the importance of having this as an important theme of your story.
It's a story that's a theme of who we are in our DNA.
Right.
We're always up against what is good and what isn't good. Who are the people in our lives that we can trust? Who can be our friends? In school, like with Albert, he experienced bullying in school. I brought that out in the book. He also, in Atlantis, had a twin brother. In Atlantis, they are twins, and his twin brother is jealous of him and his abilities. So he turns to the dark side, and through a DNA experiment that goes wrong, becomes this dragon doppelganger, where he can actually eat someone and become them. So
wow.
I really want, because Albert Einstein is such a big public figure, I had to create a really bad guy. That matched.
You had to create
his,
a foil.
A foil, exactly. And so when Atlantis, in the story, he this compass, it comes from Atlantis. And so this evil dragon chases Albert through the story by changing into different people who Albert thinks he can trust. And then he gets in trouble a few times. And he also, Albert has a good friend. His name is Johann. Johann is not real in Albert's real life, but I needed to have a friend for Albert during the story
right.
that would be there as his number two. So between Albert and Johann and Rocco, who is the bad guy in the story, it really is a chase. It's a chase of good and evil. And Rocco tries to get some of Albert's friends involved with him who go to the dark side. And you just, it's like you know you've seen these people innocently because they have low self-esteem get involved in drugs, they get involved in gangs, bad things happen to them. And so this is a story of life. And what choices do people make when they're in trouble or when they're not feeling good about themselves? What choices are they making?
Exactly. Grace, you seem to have everything that a story needs for a fantastic read. So, Grace, you have graciously agreed to read a portion of your book for us. Can you do this now and set up the part you're reading?
Oh, yes. Just a second. Here we go. I'm going to set up this chapter. It's in the fall of 1885. This is when Albert's a little boy. His father has just given him a compass, and he is about to go to school. And this is Germany. They have their schools there are called gymnasiums, and mm-hmm. it's very different than what we have here. But in this story, in this chapter, this is where Albert meets his friend Johann. So I just wanted to set that up so you understand where we're going. Where we are right now.
Cool. Great.
Albert's father was a partner in his brother Jacob's gas and electric supply company. One day, he took Albert to see an electrical lighting system the company had installed. The customer, Frederick Thomas, owned the local brewery, Unibrow. The reason Herman had dragged Albert along was that Thomas had a son, Johann, who was Albert's age. Both boys would soon begin first grade, and Herman thought it would be a good for the shy Albert to know at least one boy in his class. Albert did not want to go with his father. He preferred the familiar routines at home. Being out in new places caused him to shut off inside. When the boys were introduced, Albert just stared at the floor and went into his own world. He thought boys his age were dull. He wanted to be alone. Herman forced a small smile onto his lips. He reached down and shook Albert's shoulder. Come on, Albert. Johann wants to show you the lights in the barn. Albert knew his papa would not like it if he did not do as he suggested. So, reluctantly, his eyes still down, the reluctant guest shuffled over to Johann, wishing he could escape. Unfazed by Albert's shyness, Johann encouraged him with a broad grin. Wait till you see the lights. Come on, I'll chase you to the barn. Whooping, Johann burst out the kitchen door and ran toward the barn. Albert rolled his eyes. He ambled along, making his way across the yard. Impatient, Johann bounced on his toes as he waited near the barn door for his guest. When Albert finally arrived, Johann flung open the barn door. Running inside, he jumped onto a wooden box, reaching for a switch on the wall. It's amazing to see, he said as he flipped the switch. In a moment, incandescent light flooded the spacious barn. The smell of fresh hay and saddle soap met Albert's nose. He noticed wooden beer bottles, barrels, stacked bales of hay, and horse carriages. Unimpressed by the lighting, Albert pointed to the incandescent bulb and went into lecture mode. When electrical current passes through the wire, it causes the wire to heat. The wire gets so hot, it glows and gives off light. Johann looked at Albert in surprise, his blue eyes dancing with amazement. He could not believe what he was hearing. How do you know that? This boy is interested in this? Albert thought to himself. Albert relaxed a bit and began to explain, encouraged that he seemed to have impressed Johann. Papa takes me to work with him. He teaches me about electricity. He and my uncle want me to learn the dyeing business and apprentice with them. No kidding? Johann asked with obvious interest. And that's what you want to do? Albert shrugged. I don't know. I guess it could be okay. Johann nodded, becoming thoughtful. I know what you mean. My papa has plans for my brothers and me to take over the brewery, but I don't know if I want to do that either. Another smile lit up Johann's face. Hey, I know. I'll become a great brewer, and you can electrify all my breweries. Albert had to smile. Johann's friendliness and enthusiasm were infectious. Without warning, a light bulb went off in the electrical expert's head. Wait for a second, Albert said, tugging at his chain around his neck, pulling something out of his linen shirt. Want to see something exciting? More interesting than light bulbs? You bet, Johann nodded eagerly. As Albert dangled a brass object on a silver chain, Johann's eye grew large. Wow, what is that? It's a compass. My father gave it to me. Have you ever seen one before? Shaking his head, Johann guided Albert to a bale of hay, and the two boys sat. I haven't, Johann said, mesmerized by the fantastic device. What does it do? Albert held out the gleaming brass compass with the 12 sparkling gems. So Johann could see it better, he opened the top and rotated the compass. See how the needle always points north, no matter how I move the case? His bright brown eyes twinkled as the mystery of the unknown captured his soul. Someday I will understand why it does that. Johann's blue eyes grew very intense. Not only had he never seen a compass before, he had never seen anything like it. Amid this fantastic day, Johann paused and thought. Albert surrendered himself to the moment. He found himself trusting his charming and friendly companion, and he allowed Johann to hold his cherished prize. Johann opened and closed the clasp. Hey, come on, said Johann, jumping to his feet. Their eyes glued to the compass, and the two boys marched around the barn and watched the needle. Content with their first parade, they returned to their seats on the bale of hay, and Johann returned to the compass. Albert closed his eyes and held his precious gift to his chest. Oh, I love my compass, and I love my papa who gave it to me. The compass tingled against Albert's chest. From inside the compass, a shimmer of light burst, then radiated out about 10 inches all around Albert's hand. Albert felt the unexpected warmth and opened his eyes to find a rainbow projecting from the gem. Above the compass floated a three-dimensional 33. Johann, struck with wonder, squealed, "Look at that!" Albert threw his hands up in surprise, dropping the compass onto the straw floor. The boys sat mesmerized, what seemed to be an eternity. Behind them, the barn door opened. Papa Hermann hollered into the barn, "Albert, say goodbye to Johann. Your mama has dinner ready." Albert snatched up the enchanted instrument and looked earnestly at his new friend. "Johann, you must never tell anyone what happened today. You promise?" Speechless, Johann nodded his compliance. Bonded by his special secret, neither boy had any inkling what a vital role the compass would play in the adventure of their lives.
Wow, great read. I love the inflections and how you nailed the accents. That was really good.
Thank you.
That was really good. So, you know, Grace, the so-called lost continent of Atlantis plays a major role in your story. Have you always had a fascination for this mythical place?
I have, actually, and I do think I was from there in a past lifetime. I was doing research on Edgar Casey's Atlantis, and some of these things were just coming to me as, what if this was there? And I would read on, and sure enough, it was there, according to Ed Casey. So there are places in the story that I put in there that, to me, I think I was there doing that. So, Atlantis has always been a special place for me in history, and I do believe it did exist. And Edgar Casey, I think, has got the best information about that. I did research through Doug Simpson, who writes for Edgar Casey and the Edgar Casey Foundation. And I contacted him and I said, what stories should I read so that I can do this right. And so he gave me the books I needed to read, and that's what's in the story. So in he has a quote on the back of my book. He wrote a nice review, so it's accurate.
Nice. So at one point in your life, Grace, did you tap into the spiritual, mystical power that you focused on and harnessed for good? Was it at a very young age?
I was raised Catholic, and going into church, it was always something special for me. The awareness that there was a spiritual heart inside of me came when I was in my early 20s. I went to a seminar and I met a man by the name of John Roger and the movement of spiritual inner awareness. And the mystical travelers in the story come from this organization. And so they're very real to me and do play a big part in the story. That is where I began my spiritual journey, was in my early 20s.
Let's talk about another part of your life as a modern mystic and wellness consultant. What do you do in this capacity, and is this a major part now of your brand?
I'm a health and wellness coach. I do hair analysis and assist people in balancing their endocrine system to regain their wellness. And I really focus on wellness. I don't take any drugs. excuse me, I need a drink of water here.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Grace Health Solutions. And for me, health is very important in wellness. And part of wellness is the spiritual part of you, or keeping your attitude in a positive direction. And how we do that is through making sure that every day you wake up and you say, I have goals to do, complete today. I have a positive direction in my life I'm walking. And so health and wellness, attitude is altitude, and wellness is really important if you're going to be healthy. You just have to have a healthy mind, a body, and a spirit, and they all work together. And that's what I wanted to emphasize in my life and in my books.
Attitude is altitude. I like that. So many people, Grace, are reading books and stories on their cell phones and tablets. With flash fiction and micro stories becoming more and more popular, it seems like the attention span of the reading public is getting shorter by the minute. Do you think this radically changes the future of how we write and publish our books?
I do. I think about it. Do you think War and Peace would have been published today in the size it is? I mean, they probably would have made it in you know, 10 books. It would have been a series, right?
You would have broken it up into 20 books.
Think about it. Yeah, social media, our 24-hour cycle and everything that's going on is shortening attention spans. It's also making people less connected to who they are inside. And that was one of the goals I wanted with Einstein's Compass, was to redirect people to go back inside. You know, turn off your phone, go back and visit the person that you are in your heart, and explore your creativity, explore your imagination, create something that's new. Most people are depressed today because they're so distracted by everything outside of themselves. It's everything that we need is inside, the dream inside. Young Albert Einstein at 6 years old had a dream, and he didn't let it go. I mean, if we all had a dream of something that could make some kind of difference in our lives, you have to focus on that and see where it would go. And he wasn't distracted by social media, obviously, but I think young people today need to take a look at that. Albert Einstein was never famous until in his 20s, but he never let go of the dream. And people need to dream today. They need to dream about what can make things better for themselves and people around them. It doesn't have to be big. I mean, look at the hula hoop.
Yeah, look at the hula hoop and the slinky. Don't forget the slinky.
Yes, and the slinky.
And the slinky. Grace, in a time where hundreds of thousands of books are published every year in so many different types of platforms, so many authors want to know how they can make their book stand out from all the rest. Grace, how do you handle this? How do you handle the marketing aspect of being an author?
Social media is really important. I met a woman in a seminar in 2016. Her name is Kathy Mice, and she runs a company called Bublish. If you think of publish, you know, like when you're publishing a book, but it's Bublish with a B.
Yes, I heard
Bublish.
Of that. Mm-hmm.
Right. So Bublish is a really wonderful way an author can begin. It's less than $100 a year, where you can put all of your books, not just one, but if you have many books, on a dashboard on the computer, and she prompts you once a week to send out a tweet, which is a little snippet of your book, and also another snippet of why you wrote that particular chapter. And then she and her team go to work, and they send that on Twitter all weekend long. Before Einstein's Compass was published, I had over 100,000 people who had read Einstein's Compass snippets before it was published.
Published.
Social media
B.
is published. Yes, B. B-U-B-L-I-S-H. Bublish.
Okay,
and
that's
it's
good
very
to
inexpensive
know.
To get started. Kathy has been in publishing for more than 30 years. She's worked for some of the big houses as an editor, and she edited my book, and she also has a team member, Shyla. The two of them edited Einstein's Compass. They did the book layout. They have a whole team of people that can do everything from help you write the book and maybe even ghostwrite it, all through the process of publishing and marketing and editing, and helping you do a launch so that your book comes out right. They position it in the marketplace. They do Amazon ads. They're just a wonderful group, wonderful team. And I communicate with them often, sometimes daily, depending on what's going on, if I have a project going on. They're just tops in the industry. And they're connected to Ingram Publishing. So they are what you would get with a traditional publisher, you get with Bublish. But you keep all of your rights, keep everything. And they do charge for stuff, you know, but not like you see in the traditional publishers. They're very reasonable. Like I said, I've spent $12,000 on this book, but it's been within the cost. Effectiveness. I mean, a lot of people spend between $20,000 and $50,000, and they're with people that don't know one third of what Kathy knows and her team.
Right.
So that part is really important. Social media, Twitter. You have to be on Twitter. That's where all of the authors and people that are writing books are. Instagram is important. Also, you can put your pictures up there. I've got pictures of all the characters of Einstein's Compass. I created characters. So each character is on my Instagram page with a little story about who they are. And you have to do this every day. I mean, this is a job. Being an author is not a part-time thing. I mean, some people say, oh, I'm going to write a book and have a publisher.
And it's going to sell itself.
Well, yeah, it's not so. With 40 million books on Amazon, and Amazon holding 70% of the market today, that behemoth is running the show.
Yes.
So you have to be in step with what is going on every day, and it changes.
In closing, Grace, what's next for Grace Blair? What new irons do you have in the fire coming up? Possibly a movie? Excuse me.
Yes, actually, I'm writing a proposal. I went to the New York Expo in March, they had the book expo. And I met some people who are doing literary consulting for movies. And I'm putting a proposal together right now to have Einstein's Compass made into a movie. It's a fabulous story, and it's so visual. There are lots of things that this movie will just knock your socks off. So I had Laren, my co-writer, put together a proposal. I have Kathy over at Bublish taking a look at it, and they're going to do their editing. Then when I'm going to put pictures together, I have to make a big presentation. You have to do this right.
Right.
So that's what's going on with Einstein's Compass right now. And I give it to God, who really is in charge, and the mystical travelers. And I'm following them. They're telling me what to do. I mean, they wanted this story out there. So I'm just showing up and doing my part on the planet.
I am so excited for you, Grace. This sounds like it's going to be an excellent movie. So if people want to get in contact with you, can you give out your website address and any other contact info?
Yes. The website is modernmysticmedia.com. I am on Facebook at Grace the Mystic, Twitter at Grace the Mystic. And on Instagram, it's Einstein's Compass Novel. You can also write to me at graceallisonauthor@gmail.com. And you can find Einstein's Compass on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes. It's also on Barnes & Noble, Publish Drive. I think I've covered them all. And it's also an audiobook.
Oh, yes.
The audiobook has all the voices of Albert and his friends and all the characters in the book. Just like I gave you the inflection of German accents, the audiobook is fabulous.
Oh, man, that's a winner. So this has been the Author's Lab with me, Robert Batista. My mission is to give creative people a platform to show you who they are. One of my short stories, My Baby Has No Name, can be read for free online at spillwords.com. My guest has been Grace Blair. Make sure you pick up her brilliant book, Einstein's Compass. Thank you so much, Grace, for being my guest on the Author's Lab.
Thank you, Robert. It's been fun being here.
Oh, it's been a blast. Once again, happy birthday and have a great rest of the evening.
Thanks, Robert. Appreciate it. Send me the link when it's done, okay?
I sure will. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This has been Robert Batista, now signing off with this little rhyme. Today is yesterday's tomorrow. Though each one may bring joy or sorrow, God's message is clear to those with sight. Through darkness always comes the light.